Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey, After Buzzers, on this episode of the MasterChef After Show, we're breaking down another two episodes. We're getting so close to the season finale. We're breaking down family drama and critics' choice. Let's do this.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, yes. So it's getting hot here in the MasterChef kitchen. Hey, everybody. There you go. Thank you, Nelly. Everybody, welcome to the MasterChef After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. We're breaking down the episodes as we're getting so, so close to the season finale, which is happening next week. I'm your host, Frank Moran. Usually, and you can follow me on Twitter, at HappyGoJackie. Usually, we have a panel there with Robin and Maria. Robin is away tonight. Maria, oh my goodness, she is under the weather, but that's not going to stop her from getting involved tonight. We're going to get her on the Skype. She's going to be in here sharing her thoughts about all that. So, folks, in the meantime, though, as we're getting Maria on the line. Oh, look at, there she is, the lovely and talented Maria Provenzano.
Hi, Frank.
Look at this, playing sick. I love it.
I know, sorry.
Sorry, come on, that's fantastic. Look at you, saving the day. I mean, because who wants to listen to me breaking down all this?
Nobody wants to listen to you.
Nobody wants to listen to me. They come to this show for you and all you alone. Me, I'm just like, you know, whatever. I'm like the medicine that they have to take just to get to the good stuff.
They come for your hi, Marissa. Sorry, I said hi to our engineer. They come for your lovely voice and your hair.
Oh my! So Marie, where can they find you on the social?
Oh, sorry, I don't even have my like AfterBuzz etiquette going. I'm just like such a mess. You can find me on Twitter at Maria Provenzano, and all my information will be there.
Oh, look at that. And as always, folks, like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hop in the chat. Usually Maria is right here on the desk with her computer open, just answering all your questions and stuff. So we won't have a chance to do that tonight. But next week, season finale, everything willing, everything works out. We're going to have all the whole panel reunited to break down the final episode of MasterChef this season. So save up any of the questions, any of the thoughts, any cooking questions you may have about the entire season, or just, you know, just in general. You're making something that day and you want to ask Maria.
Well, I have the chat up on my other computer.
Oh, you do?
So,
oh, look at this. So Maria does have the chat. To. Perfect. Love it. So chat away with Maria. Ask her all those questions. So we're breaking down the, penultimate? There we go. That's our penultimate episodes leading up to the finale next week.
Yeah, I didn't realize because I didn't have it recorded, and I went on I have the Fox app on my iPad, and I was like, oh my God, there are two shows to watch. So I watched back-to-back, but I thought that was really cool.
We'll jump right into family drama. And it starts off, and I always feel like I'm getting this kind of trend with the MasterChef that usually whoever talks first and they're saying they're feeling really secure about the position in the competition, more often than not, they're the ones that end up going home by the end of the episode.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's always... It's either that or they do really well. Yeah. I don't know.
And her boy Dan, I mean, he feels like, hey, man, I'm in the final five, and all I got to do now is just knock out these final four. He makes it sound so easy. That's it. That's all I got to do.
Yeah. I thought it was really sweet seeing everyone's family, though. Oh. It actually, like, made me teary-eyed. And even seeing, oh, my gosh, I blanked on, what's the chef, the guest chef?
Oh, that our came this guest time? Judge, Richard our Blaise. Guest judge,
Richard Blaise.
I love that guy. Are you a big fan?
Honestly, I hate to say it. I don't really know that much about him.
I watched him when he first came in just as a contestant or a chef testant, as they say, on Top Chef.
Okay.
And won his season. He's come back for Top Chef All-Stars. He's competed in a variety of different Top Chef ancillary things, hosted a couple different shows for Food Network and things. And so I've always been a fan of his. I mean,
yeah, I recognized him, and I mean, he blew me away watching him cook. So that was really cool.
Yeah. So by far, this is the guy I was most excited about to see this season, and bummed though because usually all our other guest judges, they've been usually in across like four episodes or like two of our weeks, which usually are 2-hour installments. So they usually span four episodes though when they're guest judging. Yeah. And poor Richard Blais, he's only getting two. That's it. Ugh. I'm so bummed because next week we get Wolf and Puck in the house. So
you're not happy about that?
Whatever. I mean, Wolfgang, great. But then, as Maria says, they bring in the family because it's all about, you know, hey, you're cooking for somebody important today. And while Maria loves family episodes, I dislike family episodes. I feel like it's just a cheap way of getting drama in a reality show. You just put somebody's family in there, and then that's just like, of course people are going to react. I feel like that's such a cheap thing to do, and I get so tired.
I get your point, though. I mean, I get that. But I still feel like it makes you learn more about that person. So, yeah, I don't know. I get your point, though.
But I can't help because I think about like the reality of when you're shooting it, and while we're watching it over a few months, the literal taping of it takes, you know, maybe 3 weeks to a month to tape this. And they spent, okay. For us, we're watching it.
That's it?
Yeah, drawn out much longer. But for them, I mean, unlike Big Brother, which you're actually seeing it in real time where it's going over that span, most other reality shows, like, look at Survivor. I mean, they shoot it in a span of 36 days, but we're watching it over consecutive months. So, you know, when I think like, say, for example, Survivor and 36 days and somewhere along the
line. Just had a light bulb go off, by the way. So continue.
Usually what, like maybe like day 28, 30 or so, they'll bring in like the family members and you watch everybody cry. And I'm like, man, I don't know. Like I maybe it's because I, you know, I'm dead inside and, you know, I have no personal connections with people. It's like, I don't know if I'd miss my family that much in a few weeks that to see be reunited with them. I'd be like, oh, God. So for me, I was like, whatever.
You know, I think I could do it with, like, I could spend the time away from my parents or my husband, but my baby, it'd be really hard. No. I mean, I was gone for, like, when he comes back from school at the end of the day, I'm like, oh, I missed you, but he's 3. So I'm sure by the time he's 13, I'll be like, bye.
I would say Sean's mom, though, a very, very youthful-looking mother there. I'll say that. That's
so is Dan's.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, there you go. Well, yeah. I mean, he's just, you know, just a frat boy. I'll get to Dan at the end. Oh, Dan's exit was just like, what are you talking about, Dan? I mean, I think you just basically made like a 180 in your growth on this show. You came in as a tool. You kind of maybe matured for a moment, and then you kind of left as kind of toolish. You're heading back towards
that. I kind of wonder if they like want him to be that way.
Yeah, the producers are just talking like, hey, man, just be that.
Like, be the frat guy. You know? I don't know.
I don't know. You're maturing. Don't do that.
Yeah, right. And I think they like tell Brandy to talk about Kentucky every time she like speaks. You know what I mean? I think they want them to be in this sort of like box. Like this is the kind of person.
That's
true. I don't know.
It's very easily identifiable, easy to relate to somebody like, oh, that's a Kentucky person. All right, I'm gonna vote for that. Yeah. So now the deal is that they get a chance to have a mystery box, and of course they lift a mystery box, and then it's a mini mystery box inside. It's the Russian nesting dolls of MasterChef. So that was great. So they just keep lifting and lifting and lifting, and we find out their family members each chose a special ingredient for their loved ones to cook with. So it's interesting to see. I mean, I guess it's kind of cool because you feel like your family knows you the best.
Yeah, you would think. I don't think anybody would know what to do for me because really? I tried to think of what mine would be and I couldn't think of anything.
Come on, your mom or your dad, they wouldn't know, like, if they came in and they had to pick one ingredient that they know you could really do something awesome with, they wouldn't be able to do it?
I personally don't know what it would be. I mean, the only one I could relate to is the Parmesan, and that was what Sean had.
What about pumpkin? What about cinnamon?
Oh, yeah, you do know I like pumpkin, don't you, Frank?
Yeah. See? All right. I just give you a little pumpkin there. Watch you go to town.
Ooh, okay. Now, look at who knows me best when it comes to, like, cooking. Now it's Frank.
Yes! I've done it! All right!
I don't understand people who don't like pumpkin.
No, neither do I. No, please don't talk to me anymore if you don't like pumpkin. In fact, today, because as we're talking, they are just wrapping up the Thursday Night Football, kicking up the NFL season.
Oh, yeah.
But got some chips to start it off. It was tortilla chips, but pumpkin-flavored tortilla chips.
See, doesn't that sound amazing?
Boom. They were
just saying.
It was intriguing because I would just usually associate tortilla chips as more of a savory thing, but it had a little sweetness with the pumpkin on there.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I enjoyed it, though. I kept on just like... So almost
it's officially fall.
Yes, it is. Favorite time of year. Favorite time. Oh, yeah.
Oh, me too.
We get off on a pumpkin tangent.
We gotta get back to the ingredients.
Of course, they get their one thing that the family member chose, and then they only have a small handful of ingredients in this little box to be able to use with that one ingredient to make something. So they wanted to just see something, what you make with one simple ingredient. And what I did, like I said, of course, Richard Blaze comes out in his chef whites. So when Gordon says, hey, do you want to cook? Like, what are you expecting Richard to say? Like, nah.
I'm good.
So he's already wearing in chef whites. We know he's going to say yes. But it was cool to see him get to work. I mean, I loved watching him on Top Chef. So always getting to watch him do this thing. And he's doing carrots six ways.
Yeah, I was impressed. I mean, I think to do anything six ways, like, you know, how do you go about doing that? He said one of the six ways was like using the carrot tops. Yes. As like the salad. I'm like, does that count?
What I loved most about that is he's breaking down and he's telling Gordon what he's going to do. There's really some terrible ADR in there. Sound bites. Because he's like describing the first five ingredients. And when it gets down to six, where he's talking the carrot top salad, a distinct different time where they did like the audio like later in the booth and they cut it in.
Oh my God, I didn't even notice that.
It is so different. He's like, bum, 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 carrot top salad. It's like, wow, that is so clunky.
Sometimes you do what you gotta do.
And
by the way, just as a side note, in our chat, Misha's saying she hates pumpkin. We still like you, Misha.
Misha, come on.
You are a diehard Master Chef lover like we are. But she does like sweet potatoes. Christopher likes pumpkin and hates sweet potatoes.
Christopher, I'm with you. I'm pumpkin guy. Sweet potatoes, not my jam.
I like both of them.
Well, all right. That's why you're Maria Provenzano. You're open to all things. That's what makes you so awesome.
Yes. Try anything once.
Now, another thing is, I know we got some tweets about this, which I enjoyed to Christine's faces that she makes during the competition. And this, when Richard gets a smoker out, which one I loved as like, no home cook is using a smoker so far, but he pulls it out because that's kind of his thing. He's always known for doing kind of like smoking and stuff like that with his.
I thought it was cool though. I loved watching it.
It's super cool, but Christine's face when that happens, look at what he's doing. Like, what is this? Christine, come on. Like, you've never seen this in a kitchen before?
Ugh. He's putting smoke in his
like, well, all right. She's way too excited about this as a professional chef. That's why I was like, come on, really?
Okay, but I will say when we get to this point in our, you know, after show of when I actually enjoyed her, I'll let you know.
Ooh, all right. Oh, look at this, guys. That's a little tease. We'll see what happens. I can't
stick
wait.
Stick around.
So they finish up. Richard kind of brings up his plate there. I mean, and it's always cool with the smoker, and he's got it in the little glass, little dish on top, and he opens up, and you get to see the smoke kind of waft out. It's a really cool presentational look for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was very cool.
You know, and I mean, I guess I've not really done much with smoking meats or using a smoker or anything like that. But I mean, you're getting flavor from even just that small amount you're putting in there.
Yeah, and yes, definitely, because it depends on what the ingredients are. A lot of times, dairy or like a potato or something like that can absorb flavors really easily. So that's why in certain competitions, you've seen someone working with dairy next to somebody who's like has all the smoke, and it affects the flavors of what they're making because that it just sucks it in. But yeah, I think that little bit amount of smoke is just a kiss. But yeah, when you're making like a smoked salmon or things like that, like it's the smoke that cooks it, which is really what penetrates the flavor. So it's pretty cool, actually, the process.
It looked delicious. And
it looked really good.
Yeah, I would have loved to have eaten that. But they go out and they survey our contestants and find out which three are going to be up for possibly winning this Mystery Box Challenge. We get Dan. Finally, he gets brought up for a blackberry and mint turnover.
Apparently, the boy knows how to bake. Because he's baked other stuff before in this competition, so.
No, that seemed to go over really well. Tenoria's looked really intriguing. The grilled peach shortcake.
Yeah. And she had peach infused in, like, all these different ways. And, like, the caramel. And it sounded really, really good.
And it'd be interesting to see. I've never had, a grilled peach. I'd be curious to see what grilling that
would be. Oh, it's so good. Yeah? Grilling fruit is so, oh, my God. It's just like when you roast strawberries. If you ever, like, don't have, like, jelly or jam around, but you want like that sort of flavor, you can literally take fresh strawberries, throw them in the oven with like a little bit of olive oil and salt, and it breaks them down and makes them the flavor is amazing.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. And then really, you just kind of mash them up, and then
you could just they're gonna get pretty soft, but you could do that and put it on toast, but you can use it as a sauce. But like grilled pineapple, so good. People put those on like burgers and hot dogs and things like that too, because it's that sweet and salty. Or sweet and savory. So, but grilled fruit's really good. Mm. Grilled peaches is really good.
And then last we had Sean. He had an egg and fresh ricotta ravioli with sage cream sauce and a crispy Parmesan chip. Pretty impressive. Impressive with the egg yolk ravioli. That was really cool.
And I've never had egg. I've seen that done before. I've seen Mario Batali do it. I've seen it. Like, I think it was the Iron Chef. I've seen it done a couple times. And every time I see it, I'm just like, how have I not had that? I should try to make it.
And I feel just for, because it seems like an incredibly challenging thing to make and easy to ruin, especially for a home cook like that that doesn't have much experience. So, and I did like how Richard Blaze kind of brought it up and raised it and then poked it, and then you get to watch it all running down on the plate. I thought it was kind of just a cool visual of seeing that come out. But I feel like that put him so far over the other two that how could you not pick Sean to win this?
Right.
And then we get to my favorite part of the episode, where we find out what the elimination test is. That this time now they get to pick. They have no restrictions. The only parameter they have is they get pick 20 of their favorite ingredients, and then they can cook whatever they want. Sky's the limit. But they only get 20 ingredients. So they run out. They get all their stuff. They come back to their stations, and then Gordon says, "Hey, stop! You don't think it's going to be that easy, do you?" So what they find out is that these baskets are not necessarily their dream baskets. They're going to be somebody else's dream baskets, or maybe a nightmare basket.
Right.
And Sean gets to decide who gets to cook which other's contestant's basket. And that's when the fun begins.
Yeah.
As he mixes around. And everybody seems to be going pretty well with it, except when it gets to David. Oh, man. Can we just take a minute to talk about David?
I have a very big problem. I have a very big problem with him. I can't wrap my head around him. I mean, maybe in other reality shows, but I've never seen anybody with that lack of poise. He was just a child.
It was. And, you know, it's, I mean, I'm trying to figure out which is the better drama. Like, that let him just walk up the show and just kind of have that kind of shame, or having Gordon kind of trying to wrangle him back into the show and then watch him cook and eventually, you know, succeed.
But I wanted him gone.
I was just like, if you're going to be like this, man, it is a game. And people like Terry and Andrea have gotten eliminated. And I feel those two better than you, David. And they did not cry and whine when they got eliminated. They did not like.
And they appreciated being there, and they worked really hard. He's just, guys, I've never seen a grown man that act like such a baby.
Yeah, Sean called it when he was like, he knows that Sean is easy to have a meltdown. And he pushed that button on him, and it worked. It worked perfectly. You know, and it was just like, come on, Sean. Yeah, I mean, David, you are, to use his excuse that he was doing with Richard, like, oh, my daughter was there, and she, you know, I didn't win
be a good role. That's the thing. He's a parent. You should be a good role model. How would you want your daughter to react in the situation?
Yeah, just stomp
come on,
off.
Guy.
Ugh. Such, and I'm glad that the Gordon at least got him back into the competition. I was almost like, do not start giving him ideas of what to cook. I'm glad they did not steer him that far. But still, even that the fact that they, you know, even him and Richard right there at his prep station going like, you know, hey, you got to do it. Was anybody else? Everybody else is all nervous as well, too. Nobody else is like asking for like, hey, I need a pep talk, too. Come on.
I thought it was completely ridiculous.
I just wanted him just to fail. But so they cook everything there, and so we find out that David gets up first. They finish, and he goes up with smoked trout and dive cups. And I did like Gordon, at least. I do like the fact that when they go up to present to the judges, that is usually like reserved as like a little call-out time. But David seems to be one that gets called out a lot on that show. Christine did it last week. Gordon does it again.
I love that she did that, too.
Yes. You got to cut the crap and get in the game. He did the best that he could with what he got. I mean, certainly Dan did not pick the best ingredients, but
what was he gonna make? Like,
I have no idea. And when he comes back, he was like, "I picked trout. I mean, I never cooked with trout, but you know."
I wonder if he like actually in his mind was like, "This is too easy. Something's gonna."
Maybe. Then Tenori did a celery root and parsley marinated lamb chop. That seemed to go over pretty well. Brandy did ravioli stuffed with crab, ricotta, and basil with Alfredo sauce.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That one he said he loved. That looked really good. Really rich, but...
Yeah.
It looked really good.
And Richard put out something here, and somebody who's Italian has worked with pasta. I mean, he says that you want the pasta so thin that you could read a newspaper.
Yeah, that would be tough.
Do you like to get your pasta that thin? Do you make your pasta that thin?
I don't usually do like a ravioli. And when I make my spaghetti, I bet you probably could read a newspaper through it. I bet you could, actually.
Oh, well.
I haven't tried. But yeah, I mean, because you are supposed to go through a process with the pasta thing that like you saw her like manually doing mm-hmm. it. I have one that actually it's attached to my stand mixer. So it does it for you where you just have to like push it in, but you have to do it over and over and over again. But yeah, I mean, I get that. You don't want it to be too thick.
How many, I'm always curious because I'm always fascinated by the process of that. And mm-hmm. when I watch people on competitions do that and they're using either the manual press or sometimes like the automated one like you have. Mm-hmm. But I usually only see like the beginning of them doing it and then like the very much at the end when it's like all nice and, you know, like they've got it finally.
Yeah.
Like how many run throughs are you usually doing on that?
Let's see. Well, there's like for mine, the higher the number, no, now I need to look back at it. I think it's the higher the number, the thinner it is? I don't remember. But either way, you have to do like a thicker one at least a couple times. It's just going to depend on your dough. But do it a couple times and then you work your way down to the thinnest. So you can't just go straight to like the thinnest one because it's not going to fit.
Okay.
So I would say you do it 2, 4, 6, at least 8 to 10 times probably.
Wow, man. Because it's, I mean, just like the finish look is so cool when they're just like balancing it all like, and just like they fold it.
It's
and
like
stuff.
Super long.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, and they just kind of just like fold it in and on itself. And just oh,
if you make so homemade cool. pasta, you have like more than you know what to do with because it makes so much.
Can I add something to this?
Please.
Yes.
Coming,
Marissa.
This is Marissa. Coming from an Italian family who always makes pasta with the pasta roller and whatnot, sometimes mm-hmm. it goes anywhere from 5 to 10 times that you have to put the pasta through to make it really thin.
There are
different levels. You start at like the highest number, which is a thicker, and then you gradually work your way down to the thinnest.
See,
number.
Okay, I was getting it mixed up. I'm like, I have to look back at that. Thank you, Marissa. So yeah, so the higher the number, the thicker. Is that what you're saying? Or thinner? Do I have it reversed? Why can I not? My brain isn't working.
It's something to that effect. You start the thickest number, and then you work your way to the thinnest.
And you work your
number.
Way down. Right. Yeah.
Ooh. But I think the ultimate result is it's delicious, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That sure. Okay.
Yeah. Homemade pasta, especially, well, if you think of it also, because I think she, well, I know Sean used egg yolks, but I don't know if she used egg yolks and egg whites. But when you make a fresh pasta and it has those eggs in it, it does make it, you know, more tender and a softer pasta than the regular pasta you buy at the grocery store and you break in half. That's just like strictly the semolina mm-hmm. flour and like water. There's not generally an egg in it. So there's a difference between – that's one of the biggest differences.
Now, I wonder just I don't know if it's not necessarily devil's advocate, but certainly if you look at everybody's baskets, I mean, David seemed to have a really good basket there. So wondering, you know, certainly that the skill and the technical abilities to be able to make really good pasta, I mean, certainly that relied on Brandy. But I imagine she has a leg up when you have great ingredients to start with.
Well, and that's what I was thinking when it came to the ingredients. I'm like, you know – it was so funny because David had that basket with the thought that he was going to do pasta and Brandy did pasta, right? Okay. So then you go to Dan who got Tenoria's basket. Tenoria was going to do
the deconstructed jambalaya.
I'm sorry?
The deconstructed jambalaya?
Jambalaya. That's the word I was looking for, like a jambalaya. And so Dan's like, well, these are the ingredients for jambalaya. Why don't I just do a jambalaya? And he got like persecuted for it. Like, they're like, why did you steal her idea? It's like, because that was the shit in the basket. Like, so did Brandy. Brandy worked with the stuff she had because she wanted to work with what was in the basket. So it just didn't make sense to me that they were like, out to get him. So I think they were just like ready for him to go.
Because I guess with Brandy's, I mean, you're sure you're making pasta, but perhaps she was going to fill it something different than what David was going to fill it. So, I mean, I guess maybe she could have had her own spin on what she was making. And David doing jambalaya, or Dan doing jambalaya, that, I mean, I guess it was just following Tenoria's, like, roadmap, I guess.
I don't know.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like,
what it doesn't matter. I mean, they could have the same ingredients. It's all about execution and still how you present it, how you, you know, put the flavors together, all of it. I just think that was ridiculous.
Yeah, because I feel like you can't look at Dan and go like, well, you know, you've never cooked jambalaya, so I don't know if you really, you know, you should be making jambalaya. Well, that's the ingredient. You're right. That's the ingredients you get stuck with in the box. I mean, what
else
are you
gonna always
do?
Want him to go out of their comfort zone. So it's
Yeah, so why not? That's definitely out of his comfort zone.
That was weird.
Because as he brings it up, they give him a hard. Christine gives him a hard time about that and says, you know, mm-hmm. Hey, it's okay, but I want to see more Dan on the plate. I want to see more of you on this. And yeah. I felt like as soon as they said that, I mean, as much as they were kind of they kind of criticized David's actions throughout the episode, once they said that, I figured Dan's days were numbered.
Yeah,
and
I knew they would be at some point, anyways.
But Brandy wins. Look at that. I'm so glad about that. That she did a really good mm-hmm. job on that. And Dan goes. And it's like, I know he couldn't have won the entire show, but I still wanted him to stick around and have David go home just because of David's actions.
Yeah. Me too.
I mean, it's like, that is just not like, how could you watch the way he's behaved and go like, this is, it's been repeated. It's not like this is the first time you're like, whoa, where'd this come from? But he's shown that throughout the season. It's like, I don't want this guy to be MasterChef. But I do like as Dan leaves, Dan picks Brandy as who he thinks is going to win, and says he came to the competition as Dan the frat man, became Dan the testicle man, and then left Dan the chef. Easy there, Dan. I don't know about that one.
Actually, his stuff has really improved. If you look at it from like the first episodes, it really has. I mean, they said that the jambalaya was not good, but I thought his presentation, when he brought it up, I was like, oh my God, he might stay. I thought it looked really, really good. So I don't know.
But I did like his final thoughts where he goes, I'm just excited to go out in the world, get a new girlfriend, and cook her a Michelin star dish. I'm like, what? Oh Dan. God. It was like, you're classy as you came in, Dan. That was great.
Yeah, exactly. So in our chat, Misha goes, as far as I'm concerned, if they let Andrea go for missing the buzzer, David should have gone immediately for walking out.
That's true. As soon as because he got past those doors. And it's
I think once you're out.
Yeah. You're gone. Come on. Like, how far? What, are you going to let him get in his car, start driving home, and then stop? You know, like, how far do you let him go before you're like, he's officially left the competition field. So he's got to be eliminated. I would agree. As soon as you leave those doors, you got to be gone.
Yeah.
But we get him back for another episode. I mean, you know, it's like, I just wanted him gone. Ugh. But we get to the critics. We get a critic's choice. So we find out now this episode, everybody's, we got critics, some of the toughest people to cook for. Feel like if you found out you're going to have 20 critics coming over, would you be
sick?
Yeah. As Gordon says, crapping his pants.
Yeah.
Like,
All
right. And Christine says, you know, they can make you, they can build you up and then tear you down in 6 weeks.
Yeah. They can make your restaurant last for 6 years, or they could tear it down and last for 6 months. That's something about six. Yeah.
And we do find out that they're not, because it's such an incredible challenge, they're not going to be cooking individually. They're going to be cooking in teams of two. And Brandy, since she won the Mystery Box Challenge, she gets to pick who her teammate's going to be, thus making the other two a team as well. And she's smart. I mean, who else? Very smart. I mean, who else were you going to pick? She picked Sean.
Well, but what if something went wrong and then she'd have to go against him in, you know, head to head? So that's where it's...
Yeah, but man, I feel like if you're confident with yourself and you know Sean can bring the goods, if you were in her spot, could you have seen yourself picking Tenoria or David over Sean?
I could have possibly picked Tenoria, just because I would trust her. But I think, yes, at the end of the day, the best choice is Sean to pick, totally.
Yeah.
And same for, like, if I was Sean, I would pick Brandy, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, because Tenoria, who knows? She could have still been in the competition if she'd been with Brandy as opposed to, but who knows? Sean with David, maybe they could have pulled it out. But I mean, David, because David botched their whole side of things.
Yeah.
But they find out, okay, hey, they get these two great, huge crates filled with incredible ingredients chosen by the master, by the judges themselves. And they're going to be cooking for all these food critics. So, when they're breaking down what they're going to do and they're cutting back and forth, I mean, already Brandy and Sean just seem like, hey, we're really kind of getting along. Hey, we're going to make it like a, you know, like a symphony or like a composition in purple or whatever. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
David annoyed me with him and Tenoria, because Tenoria says, ooh, my favorite polenta. I'd like to make a polenta cake. And then David says, no, no, no. We need to do it elegant. We just can't, you know, just dump it on. It's got to be a nice polenta cake. Like, she just said she was going to make a polenta cake. David. Yeah. Oh, thanks for disagreeing, you know, like shooting her down and then making it seem like it was your idea. Like,
which yeah. ended up being the best thing on the plate.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks, David, for blowing all that. But they, Brandy and Sean, they decided to go with the halibut to cook, which are...
I love halibut. I when they say it's very difficult to work with, I don't generally have problems when I cook with halibut. So I was surprised because I order it a lot at restaurants too.
Do you think just the challenge of it is not that you have to cook one piece, but you have to cook so many pieces for all the critics?
Yeah, that could be it. That could be it, yeah.
And then Denoria and David, they go with the duck. I'm not a huge duck person.
No, it can be really gamey and oily.
But, you know, there's as they start cooking it, and I mean, speaking of gamey oily, or you can just like not cook it, you know, well enough. And that was David's problem. I mean, just so much raw duck going on there as he's slicing it up. Like, it was just looking terrible.
Yeah.
But now, the one thing that kind of irritated me is what Gordon, when he gets in here and he goes up to Brandy and Sean. And it's like, why are you doing this? Why are you cooking halibut? Why are you going so crazy? And Brandy's like, you're always telling us to push ourselves, get outside our comfort zone. And then Gordon says, yeah, but on a night like this, I wouldn't. Like, how is this any different than any other MasterChef challenge? Like, I mean, right. Certainly it's critics, but it's like the stakes are the same at every single competition. You either win or you go home.
Right.
So why wouldn't – and if you're constantly – your constant criticism, which they gave to Dan just the last episode, that there wasn't enough of him. He didn't push himself enough on this plate. And he went home. Like, how can you tell him, like, now's the time? Like, we're supposed to read your mind, like, play it safe? That is so frustrating when a judge comes up there. And I don't know if they're doing it just to mess with your mind or whatever, but it's just like, come on. How can you do that?
I think it's just for drama. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like they look for what piece of the puzzle is missing. It's like if they're going out of their comfort zone, oh, my God, don't do that. Or if they're staying in their comfort zone, well, you shouldn't have stuck in your comfort zone. So it's really...
It's moments like that it's like you feel like, man, this competition is just so arbitrary. You just like, all right, you should have gone out of your comfort zone. Really? I should have this time? I should have? Oh, okay.
This time?
You should have played it safe this time. Like, what? Huh? Okay.
What?
But I will say what I liked about Brandy and Sean is like during that whole time, man, I didn't see any pressure on them at all. They really worked well together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but I like both of them, and I think they're both really good chefs, and so I think it just worked. You know, I think they just were on the same page. I think if Dan was there instead of David, I think Tenori and Dan would probably have worked better together than Dan. David's just a head case.
Yeah, because I think Dan and Tenori would have built on the time they had to do that tag team challenge, and they seemed to communicate pretty well in that. I think if they had a chance to kind of do it again and working at the same time, I think they could have done really well.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, you know, for much as like I criticized Sean at the beginning of the season, because there was always like he'd always kind of get really worked up and kind of like get in the weeds and he'd be like flustered and floundering. And he was like, I'm not going to make it. But in those last few episodes, I mean, no, he's really been delivering and I haven't seen that kind of floundering from him.
No, I think not for a while. There's been a few episodes. I mean, it's been a while since we've seen him get really flustered about stuff. He's been on a roll.
Yeah, which I feel like it's like you just start getting used to the pace and the demands of a competition. And if you're able to keep up with that, then you can do really well. But if you start, I feel like David, he can so easily feel like it's just too overwhelming. And then it's like, I can cook for you given these strict parameters. And if you push me outside those parameters, I'm going to melt down.
Yeah. If I don't get my way.
Yeah. Which, and Gordon, to backtrack to that episode when he starts talking with David, it's like he brought up the perfect analogy. Like, you're a poker player. You are used to getting dealt crappy hands. And
get
still
your game face on.
Yes. Oh.
It's frustrating. I think as a viewer, watching him is so frustrating.
Yes. Oh, man. Now, we see some of the critics, which is kind of cool. I like it's so orchestrated and stuff. As they walk up on the catwalk in the single file, and then they all, like, step in unison to the side to look down on them and stuff.
Yeah, in our chat, they said they acted like the Illuminati.
Yeah, yes. Just judging.
That was Misha who said that. That's funny.
I mean, of course, the one that always that sprung out to mind was Jeffrey Steingarten, because I always remember seeing him.
Oh, yeah.
Like on Iron Chef. And stuff like that on the Food Network, judging and stuff.
He's not pleasant to watch eat, though.
No.
Not many people are, like, pretty eaters. I mean, I don't think it's, like, pretty to watch people eat. I mean, Gordon Ramsay, I don't really think about it. I guess like watching him is just sort of like, you know what I mean? I feel like it's just, he's so used to eating on television. But like that guy, when he eats, I'm just like, oh.
All right. One thing I want to know about critics is, you know, why don't they smile? What does it hurt to have a smile on your face when you're going in? That just because you're smiling does not mean that you're going to give them a great review. It doesn't mean that you're going to give them a bad review. It doesn't like reveal anything more than if you were just like scowling or looking dour.
I think they tell them to do that.
Really?
I think they tell them to look tough and to be serious.
Oh man, whatever. I mean, so that's whatever on that one. Did you recognize any of the other critics on there?
No, I didn't. Not that I. That was probably the only one. No, they had like the person from Vogue and like I think like LA Times or yes. LA Magazine or something like that. Like they had a lot of people there.
Yeah, they had one from Los Angeles.
People, so no, yeah. I didn't.
The Los Angeles Magazine one, I'd seen her on a couple other okay. Bravo shows and stuff. And I think she's also come on like Hell's Kitchen to judge, mm-hmm. you know, occasionally. So I recognized her. But the other ones, I was like, no, I don't know who you guys are, except for Jeffrey Steingarten.
Yeah.
So they go in. I do like each critic had their own little table and a little the little review cards there, and they get served both plates. And we find out that the blue team, they do a duck breast finished with a red eyes. The red team, David. Duck breast finished with a Ras El Hanout. I'm hoping I'm saying that correct. Whatever that is.
I didn't know what that was, to be honest with you.
A Brussels sprout slaw and a crispy polenta cake, which, as you were saying, was the hit of that entire plate.
Yeah, I think they cooked it in duck fat, or at least got a pan sear on it in the duck fat. And they said that made a big difference. It was really good.
Brandy and Sean, they do hazelnut crusted halibut with a Meyer lemon verblanc and an asparagus salad. It looked really tasty.
I thought it looked beautiful. I really was impressed by how it looked.
And I will give it up as they're freaking out, like, oh my gosh, they're never going to be able to plate all this in time. And Brandy picks up the two trays of halibut with each hand, and the judges are freaking. And I loved her reaction to that.
Yeah.
Just like, well, ha, I got this. Just like teasing him almost. I loved it. It was just so cool.
She's a teacher and a mom. Like, she knows how to multitask.
Yeah. I mean, she's just like, I got this. And she didn't mind like showing off a little bit. She's like, oh, that was great. It was very endearing, I thought.
I thought it was cute. Yeah, and I thought the plate, just having those little dots of purple and white, and it just was very springy and fresh. I thought it was beautiful.
But I liked that the LA Times guy, he did not like that. He was like, these are like the dots of like a kindergarten's painting or whatever.
But a lot of the other people liked it, and then when he said that, I was kind of like, oh yeah, it kind of does.
I mean, it's so interesting. Like, I guess because I only watch, I've never dealt with the critic in real life, and I only see them here on these shows, all these different competition shows, and they always look so dour. So I was wondering, like, you must smile at times and just in life when you go to these restaurants, right? I mean, have you seen a critic in real life? I mean, they must be happy at some point in their life.
I would hope so. But I think they're known for being very serious when it comes to food, so. Ugh.
Why can't you be serious and have a smile on your face? Can't you do that? Can you be serious and also be just like a warm, engaging human being? I don't know.
Probably.
Well, yeah. But I guess at the end, we find out the results. And it's, of course, I didn't have any doubt on this. I don't know if you did. But David and Tenori lose. Sean and Brandy win.
Yeah, I was pretty sure. But you know when they do the edits, they always kind of make you try to think, oh, maybe they did. Like, yeah, I thought that Sean and Brandy were going to run away with it. But they said it was kind of close.
Yeah. And I did like, though, as the critics are leaving, Jeffrey Steingarten, man, just getting all up on Tenoria.
That was pretty funny, though. And it was funny. Gordon Ramsay goes, she's taken, or she's not single, or so whatever it was. She was like, yes, I am single.
Yeah. Break me off a piece of that Jeffrey Steingarten, man. Let's do it. I want to watch him eat.
Well, just don't eat in front of me. Poor guy. So mean to say.
Now, we find out, as Gordon says, this is a MasterChef first leading into the finale. Usually, just two cooks going head-to-head. For the first time, they're going to be doing three chefs in the finale.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how that's going to break it up. So, of course, the winning team automatically advances to the finale, and then the losing team, they're going to have to go head-to-head, and only one of them is going to make that into the finale.
The two I picked. I picked Sean and Brandy a while ago.
You did.
I did.
Yeah, I mean, I was running strong with Tenoria. So we find out, was Sean and Brandy safe? they make it there. So now it turns against Tenaria and David having to go in against each other for this final elimination test to go into the finale. And this time, they're going to be doing pork three ways.
That's tough. Anytime you have to do more than one dish.
Oof. Well, we find out that for Christine, it's pork tenderloin. For Richard Blaze, it's pork belly, braised. Mm-hmm. And then for Gordon, it's a double-cut pork chop. And they have 75 minutes to cook all three. I've never cooked pork before. So in terms of 75 minutes for those three dishes, incredibly, like, is that a short amount of time, just enough time?
I just don't think that's a lot of time at all. I mean, I would think you would need, I guess because you kind of want them all to be hot at the same time. If you had more time, you'd have more time to prepare the sides or like the, you know, accessories. Accessories. You know, the stuff that goes with
it.
You
got to accessorize.
The accessories. Then you'd have more time for that. But I think in terms of like having them all done at like the same time, have them all be hot and the execution of them. Yeah, 75 minutes. It's cutting it really close to have all the bells and whistles, but to get all of the pork done, you could get it done at that time.
Yeah, I'm always curious how they determine time limits on these food competitions, especially when you're cooking multiple things like this. Because, I mean, you want it, I guess, the time frame to be enough that you feel the pressure, but you also want to be able to give them realistically enough time to complete something that's edible at the end of it. I mean, if you don't give them a chance, if they kind of botch it and then you're just getting like undercooked food.
I think that I think 60 minutes would have been really cutting it close. I mean, 75 minutes is hard though.
Man, and I just feel like, especially with these, as they were talking about the way when they started cooking and how each of the chefs would go and start preparing it and when they would start cooking it. Right. Man, that's really just like balancing all those different cooking times to get everything to sync up at the end. Man, that seems would be so intense.
And I wonder if they're a little bit forgiving in terms of like if the side isn't as warm as it should be or things like that. I feel like they have to be for this.
Yeah,
if you're preparing three different things.
Because, I mean, they pretty much said, I mean, even though they wanted you to kind of replicate their dishes, I mean, they did say that the star of this whole thing is the protein. So I feel like that was the thing that they were concerned about most, is if can you execute this protein correctly? But we could see how easy it would be just to get lost in the competition, because Tenaria, basically, everybody's harping on it. Everybody's concerned. It's like almost 15 minutes left, and she still has her pork tenderloin just sitting there.
I know. And
it's a shame when you reach at some point, just because certain things just take a certain amount of time to cook. And if you know if you miss that cutoff point, no matter what you do, it's not going to come out right.
Yeah, and it just is unfortunate because she did get a lot of those other sides in, and David didn't. So I think that should have shown for something, but.
Yeah, it's always tough. I guess if they really had stressed the accurate replication of their dishes, then maybe Tenaria would have had a better shot. But it just felt like they kept on harping on the protein so much.
Yeah.
I could see why when they started breaking down and going through it. I mean, because Tenaria's pork tenderloin, I mean, she's slicing it and she's like, ooh, yikes.
Nothing you can do. Yeah.
No, that's... Ugh. Oh, I mean, that's...
Raw pork sounds terrible.
Yeah. And I feel like as all the judges taste the various dishes there, it just seems that David did better with the meat and Tenaria finished, as you're saying, all the garnishes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she did all that.
I feel like Tenaria's overall was better, but David's meat was better.
Yeah. So. And so it comes down to the judges determining. So Christine picks David, Richard picks Tenaria. Of course, they split. So it comes down to Gordon to pick the winner. And I just thought just the way it was going and how much they were putting on for the meat. That Tenaria was going to get the boot, which surprised me because I feel like I'd rather see Tenaria in the finale than David, just the way he's been acting. But Tenaria gets cut.
Yep.
All right, so now we're here at the end of the episode, and I've not heard what is your Christine moment.
Wait, hold. That's what I was just going to say. So my moment when I was kind of like, I feel like I actually saw some realness from Christine is when her and Gordon Ramsay were standing next to each other when Tenaria and David were like bickering. They were kind of like standing there kind of getting a kick out of it. But when they were talking, sort of her reaction and her interaction with him, I felt like I saw some realness out of her where she was kind of laughing and enjoying this. And she's like, I can't believe this is happening kind of thing. And it was just one of my favorite moments of her because I felt like it was authentic.
Yeah.
Did you agree to your?
I would agree. Yeah, I mean that was I mean I didn't see that scene, that moment. That didn't stand out to me as much.
I thought it was funny. I was like, oh, I like you in this moment.
Well, I mean, her scene when to go back to the first episode when David's walking out, taking off the apron, and she's like pointing, "What's David doing?" Like she didn't even finish her sentence. Like, "What's David?" Like, all right, whatever, Christine.
Yeah.
But I, even though Tenoria is out, she does get to leave with the compliment from Gordon Ramsay that she has given him the best shrimp grits he's ever had. That's an awesome compliment if you're going to get that from Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
Wait, for him to say, like, every time I ever have shrimp and grits, I'm always going to be thinking of your dish.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, I feel like Gordon Ramsay is not one for faint praise. So if he's going to make an emphasis like that, like, you got to take that as a sincere compliment.
That's like my mission in life.
Just get Gordon Ramsay to come in and give you a nice good compliment.
I don't care what it's about.
You said hello really nicely. Oh, yeah. Thank you. So then next week, the season finale. We have David, Sean, and Brandy going head to head. Three people going can compete. Only one person can win the title of MasterChef, $250,000, and their very own home cookbook there.
I forgot it was $250,000.
Yeah, you don't forget about that. Of course, David doesn't care about that, as he says. I only care about the title of MasterChef.
That makes me hate him.
Whatever, dude.
Like, I don't like you. Like, we're not friends. Okay, are we making predictions?
Wait, let's here we go. I mean, we got it. Next
week's finale. I don't know if you can do the prediction thing because I'm Skyping. Yep.
So, all right, who do you think's going to win?
And
your After Buzz. Oh, here it is.
Oh, we can do it.
And now, your After Buzz TV predictions.
All right. David, Sean,
thanks, Marissa,
and Brandy.
For that.
Now, Maria, you picked Sean and Brandy early, so now you got to choose between the two favorites. So who are you going with, Sean or Brandy? Well,
you know what? I'm actually going to agree with a lot of the people, what they're saying in the chat. So they're actually talking about how, because the winner comes out with a cookbook, they don't think that David would win because they don't think his cookbooks would sell because I don't think people like him.
Yeah.
I agree. I think Sean could have cookbooks that could sell because it's sort of like that Vegas type of thing. But I agree with people in the chat. Brandy's going to win. She can sell more cookbooks. She's more authentic. She's more relatable. And she's good. And she's like, she has that Southern style. And I think she's a fan favorite too. I mean, I think most of the people want her to win.
Yeah, I would agree. If I had to choose between that, and that's a really good point that you bring up with the cookbook, that if you see kind of dishes that would get you excited to go in the kitchen and try to replicate, I think seeing Brandy's more home style kind of spins on different types of dishes rather than Sean's very, like, it seems sadly to say, like, more upscale, more elegant plating and design and stuff. It's like, that doesn't get me excited.
That's a great point. And what am I going to want to actually make in my kitchen?
Yeah.
I would pick Brandy.
So I think we're both agreed with Brandy. I'm fingers crossed that this happens. We'll see what happens. Yes. But in the meantime, folks, this is going to do it for this episode of the MasterChef After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. But again, folks, thanks so much for joining us here. I'm Maria. Before you go, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me at Maria Provenzano on Twitter, and all of my information will be there.
Oh, excellent. Awesome, folks. You can like us on Facebook, subscribe to the iTunes, give us those 5 stars, like us on, subscribe to the YouTube chat, hop on the YouTube chat next week there, break it down, the season finale. Robin, Maria, and myself will be back here. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Frank Moran. You can follow me at Happy Go Jackie. We'll see you next week for the season finale of MasterChef. See you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin
Undergaro. Views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
I wasn't sure if I was being recorded or not, so I just did it.